Hi everyone, welcome back to the show. It's Louisa Nicola. I'm a neurophysiologist and human performance coach. I'm the founder of NeuroAthletics, where our mission is to democratize brain health education so you can perform better, think faster, and live longer. Today is the first solo episode of 2024, and it's all about heart rate variability. Yes, I am unveiling the secret behind my viral social media reveal of an astonishing 204 HRV and a very, very low 44 resting heart rate. I'm going to dive deep into the essence of HRV, its enhancement, and its pivotal role in health, performance, and brain health. I get asked a lot about HRV, and many of the students at NeuroAthletics and of course my personal clients become super obsessed with this one metric that has been dubbed the ultimate health score. But before we get into the episode, go and smash that follow button on iTunes, on Spotify. We have so many exciting things happening at the Neuro Experience. Now that I'm back in New York City, we have more people added to the team, which means more episodes weekly. We're going to be doing weekly solo episodes and weekly interviews as requested by you guys. So take a moment and go and hit that follow button. Let's get into the episode. Before we get into the episode, I want to thank the first sponsor, and that is Bubs Naturals. So I started taking collagen peptides about a year ago when I first read a human study that showed that supplementing with collagen significantly reduced wrinkles around the eyes after only 12 weeks of supplementation. So for those of you who don't know, collagen is quite a ropey structure. It keeps everything together. And the breakdown of collagen from, you know, UV rays and other environmental factors, and of course aging, results in fine to deep wrinkles around the skin. And this is what causes skin aging. So I started taking collagen peptides. All I did was I started adding it into my morning smoothie. And then I got onto Bubs Naturals. And I love them because of this reason. Their collagen, sourced from grass-fed and pasture-raised cows, is the purest form, promoting everything from joint health to gut health and muscle recovery. And they also have this MCT oil creamer. I never used to use that, but now I do, because now I'm actually mixing the collagen peptides and the MCT creamer with my coffee. And they're a game changer, especially if you want sustained energy and mental clarity, which is absolutely perfect for anybody who's on the keto or paleo diet. The real beauty of Bubs Naturals is the simplicity and effectiveness of their products. So as a woman who values both health and simplicity, I find the flavorless, highly soluble nature of their collagen very seamless. It's a very seamless addition to my daily routine. Plus, knowing that Bubs Naturals is committed to quality with their NSF for sport certification gives me peace of mind. So if you are ready to enhance your daily health ritual with Bubs Natural, just visit bubsnatural.com and use the code NEURO for 20% off your first purchase. That is bubsnatural.com with code NEURO for 20% off. The second sponsor of today's episode is Inside Tracker. I love Inside Tracker. You guys know how onto my blood work I am. So Inside Tracker is a personalized nutrition platform that analyzes data from your blood and DNA to help you better understand your body and help you reach your health goals. Guys, you know me, I've long been a believer in getting regular blood work done. However, my biggest distaste in blood work is the fact that a lot of people can draw blood. Yes, that's right. A lot of people can draw blood, and not a lot of people can actually analyze it. So a major, major problem with a lot of blood tests out there is that you get information back about your lipid panel, your metabolic factors, your hormones, and you don't know what to do about it. And the person who's giving you the results don't know what to do about it. That is what makes Inside Tracker so unique. Their platform is personalized to you. It allows you to see the levels of all of these things, and it basically tells you whether you are in a healthy state or in an optimized state, which is the green part. That's where I'm always aiming to be, in the green, which is the optimization state. So it not only does that, it also gives you specific directives that you can follow that relate to nutrition, behavioral modifications, supplementation, etc. This can really help you bring those numbers into the ranges that are optimal for you in case you are too high on your CRP, too high on your lipid panel. It can actually guide you into world's best practices to bring you into that green zone. So if you haven't done your blood work yet, I always say you should do blood work twice a year. Now is the best time to do it at the start of 2024. You should be going and getting your blood work done. And if you want to do it with Inside Tracker, you can, and you can get 20% off the metabolic panel that I recommend. Just go to insidetracker.com-Louisa. That's insidetracker.com-Louisa, and you can get 20% off your next panel. So I want to do a breakdown first and foremost of what heart rate variability is. Many of you listening probably track your HRV. I'm going to refer to heart rate variability as HRV, so stay with me. Many of you are tracking it. I do so wearing the Oura Ring. I've worn the Whoop strap. They're both great wearables in my opinion. I don't go by any other wearable. For example, I wear an Apple Watch. I have the Ultra, and I don't use that to track my heart rate variability. I don't think it's accurate enough. I also don't use the Garmin. I use the Garmin when I'm training, but I don't use it to track heart rate variability. I also don't use these two wearables for my sleep either. We now have substantial evidence to show that there is so much variation between all of these trackers. So my suggestion, first and foremost, is choose one tracker and use it. I'm always telling my clients at NeuroAthletics that nothing outside of a hospital setting is as accurate as the hospital grade systems. For example, we can do wearable EEGs, which, by the way, I'm not too fond of, but that is never going to replace an in-hospital EEG. Just like you can get your heart rate variability checked using an EKG in a hospital setting. So we have hospitals and we do sleep studies in a hospital for a specific reason. So the true measurement of heart rate variability lies within the hospital and the hospital systems. So anything outside of that, I always say that you're looking at around a 65% accuracy or even up to 70% accuracy. So that's why I always bank on looking at trends. Allow your one tracker to get to know you. And you don't want to look at your heart rate variability and have it be the be all and end all, or look at your sleep metrics and have them be the absolute truth to your data. No, what you really want to pick up on is trends. Let your tracker learn you. So let's get into heart rate variability. So like I said, I use the Oura Ring and it's showing a lot of trends. So heart rate variability is the variation in time between each heartbeat. Now, contrary to what you might think, a healthy heart doesn't beat with the regularity of a metronome. Instead, there's tiny variations in the time between these beats, and these variations are influenced by our autonomic nervous system. So if we go back to high school biology, I think that's when we learned about this. Our autonomic nervous system has two branches, the sympathetic and the parasympathetic nervous system. You've probably heard about these. The sympathetic nervous system is the fight or flight system. It's basically like the body's gas pedal. So when it's activated, it prepares the body for action. What we often call this is the running away from the lion response. So it speeds up the heart rate, it increases blood pressure, and it readies us for a quick response to a perceived threat, such as being eaten by that lion. The parasympathetic nervous system, on the other hand, is like the brake. It promotes the rest and digest state, slowing down the heart rate, reducing blood pressure, and helping the body to relax and recover. So when we are in the sympathetic nervous system, the flight or fight response is our body's primitive autonomic inborn response that prepares the body to fight or flee from a perceived threat. So this response is super crucial for survival in our modern life. It's often triggered by stresses, whether we're fighting off a lion, which I hope none of you are, or even just getting an email that we've been dreading, or even a notification on our phone. Anything that we've been dreading that speeds up our heart rate, you are activating the sympathetic nervous system. Over time, this can lead to chronic stress and various health issues if not managed properly. So, looking deeper into HRV. HRV is the reflection of this balance between the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous systems. So a high heart rate variability indicates a healthy balance and variability in your heart rate, showing that your body is well equipped to adapt to stress and recover. We don't want, so we want a lot of variation, right? We want to, if you imagine, this is how I describe it live, whenever I'm talking on stage or to a client, I basically describe our body like a seesaw, and we're balancing between the two. We're balancing between sympathetic, parasympathetic, sympathetic, parasympathetic. Just imagine a seesaw going up and down. If we are over a 24-hour period just sympathetically dominated, we are stressed out from the moment that we wake up to the moment that we go to sleep, and also during our sleep, depending on your resting heart rate, we are spending predominantly most of the day in the sympathetic nervous system. So therefore, there won't be a lot of variation between the two. So that would mean we would have a low variation or a low HRV. Likewise, if we are parasympathetically dominated, if we are completely calm, which this happens even when we don't exercise, let's just say we don't exercise every day and we're sitting down at our desks every day, then most of the day is taken up by our parasympathetic nervous system. Again, not getting variations between the two. However, if you are getting high variations of sympathetic and parasympathetic, then ergo, we will have a high HRV. So a low HRV, pretty much like I mentioned, is less variability between the heartbeats. So understanding and monitoring your HRV can be a powerful tool. This is why some coaches actually get their athletes to measure their HRV first thing in the morning, which is pretty much when I look at mine. But if I was training, if I was a really, really true athlete, many of you know I used to be an elite triathlete and I raced for Australia. And if I was back in that stage of my life now, I didn't even know heart rate variability back then. But if I was to do that now, I would actually take my HRV manually. And you can. And there are a number of different tools out there. And for some of my elite clients, some of my elite athletes, we actually do this manually because I think it actually provides a greater look into your true HRV rather than relying on a wearable. However, I'm looking at mine first thing in the morning. I open up my app, I look at my HRV, which is pretty much an indicator of the day before. By tracking your HRV as well, you can actually tailor your daily activities and habits to prioritize your health and performance. Many people, like many coaches, as I mentioned, look at their athlete's HRV and they immediately know if they're going to have a good game, if they're going to have a good training session, or they adapt that day's training session according to the HRV. Now, so many people get this wrong. So many people look at other people's heart rate variability and they're like, well, Louisa's is historically, she's got an average HRV of 190, but mine is 60. Why aren't I doing well? That's not what it's about. You have to look at yours. You have to find what is your average heart rate variability. Average. And I would do this over maybe a 14-day or even a 3-week period. Just figure out what your heart rate variability is. Figure out what the highest, like your peak is, and then go by that. And just try and stay within 10% of those metrics. If you have a low heart rate variability for one day, it's really not a true measurement of your recovery. Maybe you just had a bad sleep. Maybe you were just a bit stressed out the day before. When you know that you really need to adjust your training according to your HRV is when you see a consistent 5-day period of low HRV. So when we talk about HRV, we're really talking about the harmony and responsiveness of our body's systems. It is a window into our well-being, offering clues about how well we're managing stress, recovering from exercise, and maintaining overall health. So let's switch gears now and talk about what raises and what lowers heart rate variability, because I know that's what you're all here for, despite everything I've said so far. So as I mentioned, when I was in Australia, my HRV reached 204 and my resting heart rate reached 44. However, I must say, historically, looking at all of my data, evidently I lived in Australia prior to moving to the US, and I'm going to talk about 2020 during the pandemic because I actually went back to Australia for, I think it was around 7 months. So during that time, I have to say that I was probably at my peak health. We didn't really have shutdown or lockdown in Australia. And I was just blown away by the difference of my metrics from the US and from Australia. And there's so many studies actually, that show the correlation between moving to the US and increasing your chances of cardiovascular disease, dementia, and diabetes, which we'll reserve for another episode. So already just coming to the US, we know that there's going to be some discrepancies. So during the 2020 pandemic, historically looking at all of my data, I had a HRV average of around 190 to 200. Or let's just call it maybe 188 to 200. And it would vary, but it would always stay in that zone, with my highest ever being, I think, 201, which I documented not too long. Oh, I documented this on my Instagram back then. So my resting heart rate was historically back in 2020, around 44, 45. And guess what? Every time I go back to Australia, it toggles in those ranges. I always have a resting heart rate of around 44 to 48. And in the US, I live in New York City. I live in Manhattan. It is crazy. It is busy. The lights, the fire trucks, the police. It's noisy. It's constant, sympathetically dominated for me, which is why I think my resting heart rate is probably higher. I have an average resting heart rate in New York of 49 to 52, which, I mean, I don't need to go to the hospital for. If we've got a resting heart rate of up to 55 in my books, that's fine. Even sometimes 56, we don't need to call the paramedics. My HRV is just absolutely disgusting, I must say, in New York. Now, keeping in mind, if yours is this metric, it doesn't mean you are bad, but in terms of my highest recording heart rate variability, which is in the 200s or even 190, you have to understand that this for me is bad. In New York, my heart rate variability at its peak is like 120. I have no idea why. I actually asked Kristen Holmes, the VP of performance at Whoop. I've done a podcast with her. I did it 2 years ago. I'm going to link it in the show notes below. I asked her, and the best answer that she could come up with was the fact that it is circadian rhythm dominated and it is light dominated, which I'm not sure. I just think it's honestly US dominated. So let's look at some factors. These are the three biggest things that will lower your heart rate variability. The first one is, of course, alcohol. But let's talk about it, because alcohol isn't just a fun night out. I've gone viral on Instagram many times because I talk about the science of alcohol and that it is literally a toxin for your body. It actually really has real effects on our cardiovascular system, on our brains, and especially our HRV. When we drink even just a little, it messes with the balance in our autonomic nervous system. And we know this. I know if I have a glass of wine, my HRV just plummets. And what happens is, the reason why our HRV plummets due to alcohol is because A, it's making our heart rate more like a steady drumbeat than a responsive, varied rhythm. This means our body's less adaptable to stress and can't recover as well from day-to-day challenges. Remember, we want to be able to go from sympathetic to parasympathetic and be really strong in balancing that seesaw. If we have alcohol, which is a sedative, we can't do that. So therefore, alcohol completely diminishes your HRV. Second, late night habits and sleep patterns. Let's chat about staying up late. Staying up beyond our natural sleep cycle, like those late night Netflix binges or scrolling through social media, can seriously mess with our HRV. When we push past our usual bedtime, for me and everybody at NeuroAthletics, lights out is 10 p.m. So if I am up until, let's say, 11:30, that's going past my usual bedtime. What happens is, if we do this, our heart rate variability takes a hit. This is because we're messing with our natural sleep patterns and it disrupts the balance in our nervous system. Our body loves regularity. And when we throw that off by staying up at night, by staying up late, it's like throwing a wrench in the finely tuned machine of our body. This leads to poorer sleep quality, which again lowers HRV. Third, ignoring your body's natural rhythms. So fighting against our body's natural rhythms, whether it's from shift work, irregular sleep patterns, or just ignoring the cues our body gives us, this is going against our natural rhythms, which can lead to lower HRV. Our body wants to wake up at the same time every day and go to sleep at the same time every day. So we have this amazing internal clock. And when we ignore it, it's like we're constantly swimming against the current. And this constant battle can wear us down, making our heart rate variability drop. Our bodies are designed for a certain rhythm of sleep and wakefulness. And when we mess with that, HRV is one of the first things to suffer. So you really want to get your sleep patterns on track, and you really want to stay away from alcohol if you are looking at improving and optimizing your heart rate variability. Now, how did I work on my HRV in Australia? And I'm going to give you three ways that I did this. The first thing was I got my sleep consistent. So I started going to sleep every night at 10 p.m. and waking up at 6 a.m. However, I must say I got into bed at 9:30 because I gave myself about half an hour leeway. And we want that, right? You're not going to go into bed, shut your eyes and fall asleep. That would actually be unhealthy. So I wanted to get into bed at 9:30, start to wind down. Sometimes I read a book, sometimes I write in a journal. And then I want to actually be asleep at 10 p.m. And I want to set my alarm and be up at 6 a.m. And I understand that some people may not be able to do that. Maybe you're a mother, you're a father, you're a shift worker, you're a doctor, you're working night shifts, whatever that may be. I'm just giving you what I did. And I had some certain supplements to help me with this. And it's part of my sleep stack. You don't need supplements to sleep. I know that. But I really wanted to hone in on my sleep. So I adopted a strategic approach to enhance sleep quality. I was taking magnesium L-threonate. I was taking 1 gram of GABA, gamma aminobutyric acid, our chief inhibitory neurotransmitter. I did this because it helped calm my brain down. And I was also taking glycine. So in my opinion, this is a scientifically driven strategy, and it's based on the interplay between sleep patterns and HRV. So during sleep, particularly deep sleep, our heart rate significantly decreases, which, you know, we get a parallel reduction in HRV, right? However, in REM sleep, this is where we get an increase in overall HRV with a simultaneous decrease in beat-to-beat variability. So this pattern underscores the importance of sleep quality in modulating HRV. So we want to be able to get into deep sleep and REM sleep. And for me, because I was banking on sleep quality, which really means banking on deep sleep and REM sleep, that's why I started taking that specific sleep cocktail. I'm going to link my specific sleep supplements below. The next thing I did, so this is number two of increasing my HRV, was incorporating slow frequency breathing. And I should get more into breath work because it really calms me down. For those of you who know me personally, you know that I'm probably coined as one of those, you know, always on types of individuals. So I probably should start doing this more often, but I started doing it a lot in Australia. I specifically went into the breath work, which is titled slow frequency breathing. So this was a strategy I adopted again from Kristen Holmes. You can listen to our podcast below. But by adopting regular frequency breathing practice, you can strengthen your autonomic nervous system reflex, which then increases your HRV. And I think the main thing to pull from this is that when we focus on our breath, taking deep, controlled inhales and exhales, we're directly stimulating our vagus nerve. And this stimulation activates the parasympathetic branch of our system, which we know can increase HRV. So this is why I suggest all of my personal clients to adopt breath work at around 2 p.m. And they always ask me, why 2 p.m.? I'm like, because I believe that that's when you're most stressed. I work with non-athletes. I work with a lot of executives, and I know historically that a lot of them are stressed at around that time. So I'm always pushing them to be like, okay, guys, if you can just adopt some form of breath work at your most stressful moments, just do 5 minutes, even that will help you. Last but not least, guess what the third thing was that I did? It was sauna. So much easier to go to an infrared sauna in Australia than what it is here in New York, but I was frequenting the infrared sauna. I was doing it around 4 times a week, and it's a new practice because I don't get to do it in New York City. And I found a study which actually explored the impact of sauna bathing on heart rate variability. And basically what they did was participants with cardiovascular risk factors underwent 30-minute sauna sessions at 73 degrees Celsius and low humidity. And results showed significant changes in HRV, suggesting an increased capacity for cardiovascular response under stress. Post-sauna recovery in the study displayed a decrease in heart rate and a favorable shift in autonomic nervous system balance, marked by heightened parasympathetic and reduced sympathetic activity. So this suggests potential cardiovascular benefits of sauna use. And I guess this is probably why maybe I've got a lower resting heart rate in Australia, because I'm using the sauna. That's pretty much the only different thing that I'm doing when it comes to the US versus Australia. And here's a bonus number four for everybody. Hydration. Hydration. I don't know whether I was hydrating more in Australia because I drink a lot of water here in America. So I can't say that I was doing it more. But I did find a really great study to back up this in scientific reports. And the study demonstrated that even minor dehydration, less than 1% of body weight loss, could significantly impact HRV, but also mood and cognitive function. The study revealed that maintaining hydration not only supports cardiovascular functioning, but also plays a key role in brain health and emotional well-being. That's why I make it a point to drink around 2 to 3 liters of filtered water each day, especially important on days when I use the sauna to replenish what I lost through sweating. I also drink a lot of electrolytes when I'm doing sauna as well. But back to this study, the research involved participants in a warm environment with and without water intake to assess the effects of mild hypohydration on HRV and central nervous system function. Results showed that dehydration led to decreased HRV, indicating increased sympathetic activity, and was associated with anxiety and cognitive effort. Conversely, adequate hydration was linked to improved mood and increased neural activity during demanding tasks. So guys, make sure you are drinking enough water. I want to just end the conversation with some science, and I want to chat about a really interesting study, which is the ARIC study. So picture this. It's a group of about 900 people, all aged 45 to 64 years old. The researchers were curious about their HRV and they measured it. And they did this by checking a 2-minute rhythm strip on a 12-lead EKG. Remember, EKG is the gold standard. So this is like a really, really great study. So this is what was intriguing. They found that people with a HRV less than 14.7 milliseconds had some eye-opening risks compared to those who had a higher HRV than 14.7. They had a HRV up to around 22.3 millisecond range. So we're talking about a whopping 95% higher risk of all-cause mortality. Then they found that cerebrovascular mortality, things such as strokes, jumped up by 280%. They found that cancer mortality went up by 70%, which was literally just on the edge of being significant. But interestingly, there were no differences in coronary heart disease between the two groups. So you're probably thinking, well, what is this showing us and what is this telling us? It's basically meaning that a low HRV could be a sign of other health issues. Basically, it's like saying, hey, something else might be up here. So even though the researchers tried really hard to account for all of the usual health suspects, such as age, gender, race, smoking status, triglycerides, etc., it's still hard to say for sure that low HRV directly causes these problems, but it might just be a health warning. I'm going to link the ARIC study below. So I hope you enjoyed this solo episode digging into some of the research and the science behind HRV, what it is, and how you can start to improve it. If you have any questions for me, you can post them in the comments on Spotify, or you can come over to my Instagram and say hello or post this in your story. Other than that, make sure you're subscribed for another episode coming out this week.